Fire by Joy Massoff. There are 35,000 fire departments in the United States and about 1.5 million firefighters. This selection from the book Fire shows the importance of firefighters to their communities, both now and long ago. It also shows how their work is important to the firefighters themselves. It gives them the sense of belonging to a community, as well as the satisfaction of saving lives.
Different, yet the same. When a call comes in, whether it's a report of flames at a country farm or smoke on the 48th floor of a skyscraper, firefighters feel the same emotions. What will it be like? Will I be able to help? But every town is different. Every department does things a different way.
They all have different names for their equipment and different systems for getting things done. In big cities, people get paid to be firefighters. In small towns, they usually don't. But one thing is the same. It's always challenging, always demanding, always thrilling.
Answering the call. You are a firefighter. People count on you to come the moment they call. But you never know when that call will happen, so you are always ready. You check your equipment. You check your equipment again. You might sleep at the fire station a few nights each month, or you might sleep in your house with a beeper at your bedside. But you always wait for that moment when you hear the call for help.
The station house is a second home to you. The people you work with are more than just your co-workers. They are the people you trust with your life. They have become like family, brothers and sisters you love fiercely, even if sometimes you get on one another's nerves.
You wait and check and practice, and then it happens. When the bells and buzzers sound in the station house, there is a great burst of activity. Poles are slid down, gear is pulled on. Firefighters call these runs jobs or workers. Let's pretend that for just one day, you are a big city firefighter. You've got a worker.
Your assignment, Engine 21. Unlike small town fire departments, which keep all their equipment in one place, big city fire departments keep their trucks in buildings all over town, just a few trucks to each building. Each truck has a team. There's a driver who takes care of the rig, an officer who's in charge of the crew, and firefighters who tackle the flames or mount the rescues. In the old days, those firefighters were called backsteppers because they used to ride on the back of the truck, hanging on for dear life. This was very dangerous, so new trucks carry them inside. You will work on a shift, usually a 24-hour period when you live at the station, eating, and sometimes sleeping there. Remember, fire doesn't take vacations. Accidents never take the night off.
Life in the house. When you arrive for your shift, you pull out your gear and get it set up near your rig. If you're going to be working at night, you make your bed and help clean up the station house. There are usually training sessions to attend. You might even shop for groceries and cook dinner. There's always a lot to do. The calls will come in to dispatch via the 911 network, and you never know what they will be. A child locked in a bathroom, a car that hit a stop sign, a burst pipe, a funny smell, a cat stuck inside a wall. People call the fire department for help with everything.
Structure fire, corner of Park and Main. But a fire call is something special. And now, just before lunch, a call has come in. Smoke is billowing from a store downtown. You hear your truck number called. In many fire stations, you slide down the pole and slide into your turnout gear. Then, with your heart racing, you hop on your rig.
All aboard. The sirens are on, the lights flashing. You're on your way. You try to imagine what's waiting for you, and all the time your mind is racing along with your heart. You feel excited. This is what you've trained for.
Out of control. When you get to the scene, the crew breaks up into teams. Some of you pull in the attack hoses to cool the flames. Some set the bigger discharge lines. Others are part of search and rescue, looking for people or pets. Still others ventilate the building by breaking windows or cutting holes in the roof. When it is all over and the fire is almost knocked down, you shovel up the cinders and toss outside anything that might still burn. Then soak it until you can touch it with your bare hands. This is called the overhaul. The one word firefighters never want to hear is rekindle, a fire they thought was out, but wasn't. 3 hours after the first alarm, it's back to the station, into a quick shower, and finally, it's time for a very late lunch.
Eat like a firefighter. Firefighter McNulty's 4-alarm chicken. Ask a grown-up to help you whip up this reheat and eat dinner. Serves an entire firehouse, 6 to 8 people. 4 cups cut up boneless chicken breasts, 2 cups celery thinly sliced, 1/4 cup chopped green pepper, 1/4 cup chopped red pepper, 2 teaspoons lemon juice, 1.5 cup spaghetti sauce, 1 cup breadcrumbs, 1 tablespoon melted butter, 1 cup grated cheddar cheese. For a spicier dish, add 1.5 tablespoons Worcestershire sauce and 1 teaspoon Tabasco sauce. Combine all the ingredients except the breadcrumbs, butter, and cheese. Pour into a baking dish. Top with grated cheese. Toss the breadcrumbs with melted butter and sprinkle over the top. Bake at 350 degrees for 40 minutes. Can be reheated whenever a rescue interrupts.
Firefighting long ago. In 1607, Jamestown, Virginia, became the first English settlement in America. And in 1608, it burned to the ground. Life in this new world seemed to be one big fire after another. Year after year, people built homes, only to see them go up in flames. Here's why.
The first little pig built his house of straw. The first homes in our country were built quickly, using easily found materials such as brush, tree limbs, clay, and grasses. The roofs were made of thatch, which is made from bundles of straw lashed together, and mud. If you've ever been to a campfire, you know that a lot of those things make for a mighty flame. There was no heat or hot water and no electric stoves, so people kept fires going all day long in poorly constructed hearths.
Even children were firefighters. If you lived in the 1600s, you would have been a part of the firefighting force. It took the whole town to stop a blaze. Every single home had a leather bucket hanging near the door just for putting out fires. Unlike today, when you just turn on a faucet to get water, townspeople had to get water from ponds, rivers, or wells. When a fire broke out, people formed a bucket brigade. 2 lines stretched from the town's water source, everyone armed with a bucket. The men would fill the buckets and pass them toward the fire. The women and children would send the empty ones back to be filled. Most times, it was too little water, too late. Town after town burned to the ground.
It's 9 p.m. Is your fire out? Wisely, the elders knew things had to change. Laws were passed forbidding the use of flammable building materials such as thatch. And because most fires occurred at night, while people slept, their fireplaces still lit for warmth, a curfew, which comes from the French for cover the fire, was ordered. You could not have a fire going between 9 p.m. and 4:30 a.m. If you broke the law, you paid a heavy fine, and the money went toward big buckets, ladders, hooks, and rope.
The Rattle Watch. In the quickly growing cities, more and more houses were being built, all packed in close together. When one caught on fire, dozens ended up burning. In some cities, men were appointed to wander the streets at night to watch for fires. They carried big wooden rattles that made an alarming sound when twirled.
Who invented the fire department? Benjamin Franklin, one of the greatest Americans ever, convinced a group of Philadelphia's leading citizens to band together to form the Union Fire Company. Willing to drop what they were doing to rush to the scene, they brought with them a great sense of dedication and loyalty, the true spirit of firefighting to this day. Franklin also published an important newspaper, and he frequently printed articles urging people to be more careful. He came up with the phrase, "An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure," to keep people from carrying hot coals on shovels from room to room. George Washington, Paul Revere, and Thomas Jefferson were all volunteer firefighters, along with many other patriots. It was the right thing to do for a growing country.
Tools of the trade. You wouldn't go out to play in the snow and ice in a bathing suit, would you? Just as you depend on gloves, a hat, a warm coat, and boots to protect you, firefighters depend on their turnout gear. That gear can mean the difference between a successful rescue and disaster. Air cylinder. Hood, underneath helmet. Helmet. Eye shield. Face mask, underneath eye shield. Fire tool. Regulator. Controls the flow of air in and out. Fire-resistant line gloves. Bunker pants. Gear pocket. Boots. Walkie-talkie. Worn on left side of coat. Pressure gauge. Shows how much air is left in the tank. Total weight of the average turnout gear? 68 pounds.